I'm Bill Littlefield. We'll get back to Jackie Robinson's stories in just a little bit. But now it's time for three stories you should know. Joining me are Kevin Merida, editor and chief of ESPN's The Undefeated, and Julie DeCaro. She's the host at 670 The Score in Chicago and a sports and culture writer. Welcome to both of you.
Hello.
Hi, Bill.
Kevin, your story is about records and rebels and the end of the NBA regular season.
Oklahoma City Thunder guard Russell Westbrook on Sunday recorded his 42nd triple-double game of the season, meaning that he scored at least 10 points, 10 rebounds, 10 assists.
And in his case, and lots more of each most of the time.
Lots more for 42 games, and there are only 82 games in the season. So he broke a 55-year-old record in the NBA that was set by Oscar Robertson. But not only that, he is only the second player to average a triple-double for the season. That is an incredible achievement. I mean, it's one of the storied records. It's the kind of record for basketball. People can argue whether that's like averaging 400 Ted Williams or Joe DiMaggio's hitting streak, but it's a really big record in sports. And it's done by a player, and this is the interesting thing, that he's kind of a rebel. You know, he's has a crazy fashion look. He's not always the most media-friendly guy. And the question sitting out there now is, will he be the MVP of the season? And a lot of people say he's got to be. But there's James Harden from the Houston Rockets that's in contention. But my thought about it is, can he be the face of the league? Can he be this star that the league and the public will embrace?
I think he's a terrific candidate to be the face of the NBA. I completely agree that that's up there with Ted Williams and a whole bunch of, you know, baseball guys in terms of what he's accomplished. And I've really been very inspired by Russell Westbrook this year. I know that the kids on my block have been very inspired by him. They're all out there yelling, Westbrook, you know, every time they drive to the hoop.
My sons love him. It's hard not to root for him because he's undersized. He wasn't recruited heavily in college. He brings it every day with a kind of ferocity that is befitting of his team's name, Thunder.
The other thing that strikes me is how fortunate the NBA is in terms of publicity and public relations. There always seems to be a great story for people to focus on in the NBA. If it's not Russell Westbrook, it's LeBron James coming back to Cleveland and bringing a championship to his hometown and all the rest. Steph Curry. The other sports just don't have these magnificent stories surfacing one right after the other that keep people paying attention to it.
Football. Though the Cubs won the World Series.
And then what do you got before that? You got to go all the way back to Sammy Sosa and Mark McGuire.
That's right.
Or Cal Ripken,
we know what happened
for goodness
there.
Sake. Right. So, yeah, have we decided that he's going to be the face of the NBA?
I don't know, but I think he should get the MVP. He has my vote, though I don't have a vote.
Me neither.
But he has my my vote on my block and in my barbershop.
Fair enough. Julie, take us to Major League Baseball.
Well, the story that I wanted to talk about happened the day before opening day, or a couple days before opening day this year. Major League Baseball announced that they were going to suspend Juris Familia for 15 games under the league's domestic violence policy. That was quite a departure from what they'd done before. The range before had been 30 to 82 games. And one of the reasons that they gave for departing so much from what had been standard is that Familia undertook 12 90-minute counseling sessions. That was curious because Aroldis Chapman, whose incident, by all accounts, was much more severe than Juris Familia, was only required to do one counseling session. And we don't have information on what other kind of counseling other players have done. They're supposedly evaluated by a panel of domestic violence experts. But it sort of begs the question, who could look at both cases, one that involved a gun and a baby for Aroldis Chapman, and say he only needs to do one counseling session while Juris Familia needs to do, you know, 12 or however many he's been ordered to do. I think it's really important to get the counseling right. So domestic violence experts will tell you there's a specific kind of counseling that abusers need. It's called abuser counseling or abuser intervention counseling. It's usually a six-month program. So I'm just really curious exactly who's evaluating these guys and who's making these decisions at Major League Baseball.
Kevin, it sounds as if Julie is talking about an evolving policy that isn't evolving. Is that how you read this?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, we don't really know. The public doesn't know what kind of counseling it is. The public doesn't know if that really is, you know, helpful. And we don't really know if the degree to which the bigger concern is the public image, both for the sport and for the player. And you would like to know a little bit more.
So often, when athletes are involved in these things, public relations is the first concern. And with the NFL, that certainly has been very obvious for a very long time in terms of the concussion settlements and various other things too. And it's kind of crazy that, as you say, correctly, I think, we hear about these things when celebrities are involved and particularly when athletes are involved, because obviously it's a societal cultural problem and we ought to hear about it all the time and it ought to be addressed at every level by every organization concerned. And I'm not sure Major League Baseball and the NFL and the NHL should be involved at all. I think these are potentially criminal acts, not just something to be handled by the commissioner of his sport.
Yeah, and I think that when it comes to looking at the way the leagues are handling domestic violence, I think MLB is by far and away doing the best job. And I think it's great that they gave Yuris Familia, that there's an incentive to get help. But I think that when they set up these internal boards to determine how guys are going to be disciplined, they have it in the NFL, they have it in MLB, there's a tension there because MLB wants these guys back on the field.
All right, it's my turn. The Oakland Raiders, reportedly the only NFL team that has not had a player arrested over the past 3 years. Now, for people who know the history of the Oakland Raiders, this is quite stunning. These are obviously the new Oakland Raiders. Back in my day when Al Davis owned the team, he only hired guys with criminal records, at least as far as I can recall. Current face of the Raiders is, of course, quarterback Derek Carr, known for helping a stranger whose car had broken down and various other acts of kindness. Is this enough of a feel-good story to keep people going to games in Oakland because now they know that the team is only going to be there for a couple of more years and then they're going to move to Las Vegas? Do people show up now because they're the nicest guys in the league?
I worry for them. You know, our own Mark Spears, who is an NBA writer, but lives in Oakland and grew up and played basketball there, he gave up his season tickets. And it's such a city that is a hard scrabble city. There are a lot of guys who really rep Oakland. And I feel like there's going to be a lot of disappointment, and they may get punished for that.
You know, the NFL's priorities are so far out of whack. I mean, we've got guys getting punished for very minor drug offenses. We've got guys, you know, involved in domestic violence incidents and drunk driving who get off relatively easy. And we've got the NFL now concerned about punishing a whole bunch of players for taking part in an arm wrestling tournament because they think it's too close to gambling. Meanwhile, you've got a team that's going to play for 2 years in front of its fans who know it's leaving. I mean, it's just
kind
of a mess.
And leaving for the capital of gambling.
Yes. And I think the fans are the ones that really, you know, wind up taking the brunt of their selective outrage.
You don't think people have just gotten to the point where they're used to this?
A younger generation, I think. My kids cheer for players.
Yeah.
And that's a function of fantasy football, and that's a function of Madden. But, you know, my generation, Generation X and going forward, and those are the fans that have the money, I think those fans are going to take it really hard.
And Oakland's a good team. I mean, they were a team on the rise, and the team is a feel-good story for the area. I mean, that's the extra level of disappointment, that finally we have a team that's a winner again, great young quarterback, and here we go, they're going to be gone.
So no matter that none of them are getting arrested these days, they're leaving.
Oh, that's nice.
And that's the story.
That's quaint.
Yeah.
That's nice.
I think they kind of liked him getting arrested. I mean, that was always the image when I was growing up. The Raiders were like
bad
the bad
boys.
Guys.
Yeah, they get the painted faces and the helmets with the spikes on them and all that. Yeah. Well, excuse me, Julie and Kevin, I have to go check ESPN to see if anybody employed by the Raiders has been arrested while we've been having this conversation. My guests for this week's edition of Three Stories You Should Know have been Kevin Merida of The Undefeated and sports and culture writer Julie DeCaro. Thank you both.
Thanks, Bill.
Thanks, Bill.